This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.
If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Call in now with your gardening questions, 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. Now, here are your Garden Talk hosts, Ken, David, Mark, and George.
San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. We're going to be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
I'm good.
I think we're okay.
Good.
I'm okay. You're so-so?
Yeah, I'm always so-so.
Okay.
I'm okay and partially so-so.
Looks like crystal clear this morning.
But
wasn't
darker.
In my house.
But darker.
But it was darker. I noticed that on my way in. It was significantly darker this morning than it was last weekend as I was.
Say back in July before. I mean in June before we started our way down to the.
How many minutes are we down?
I didn't check
how many minutes darker was it, Mister?
I didn't check. I will look into that for
please.
You.
Please, I want an update before the show is out.
I'll have to go break out my stone observatory in the backyard and see.
Beautiful crescent moon last night. It was not there this morning.
I didn't notice.
Which
I don't think
part?
I was,
you didn't notice that it wasn't
notice
here this morning?
I didn't notice the crescent moon.
So you weren't out at your stone observatory last night tracking
was
the
not.
Moon. Okay.
No, I was not. I did not track it. We kicked off the restart of our garden classes last weekend. At
I thought you were going to say Del Mar.
We had a good turnout.
Yeah,
in Poway.
Yeah, very busy.
In San Diego, it sounds like they had a good turnout, and we're going to do it again
today.
Today, as a matter of fact, in Poway at 9:30, it's going to be summer color with Brian, who's going to be handling that. He's our buyer at the Poway store. And in San Diego, it's going to be summer vegetables with Josh.
Yeah.
And if you haven't gotten in your summer vegetable garden, the selection isn't as deep as it was back in the springtime, but there's still plenty of time to. Still plenty of time to put stuff in.
Is there still plenty of time for me to say I'm going to?
Oh, there's ample opportunity to say that.
Yeah. You can always
It might
that.
Be late for corn, something like that.
Yeah, some of those things.
Bigger,
well,
yeah.
Well, we had some 4-inch corn that was almost 3 feet tall, so you might still be able to do that.
And some of the larger pumpkins that are like 110 days to maturity, those might be a little difficult.
Correct. You know, the first time I did a big pumpkin, it was the first week of July that I put it in, so it's not that far away.
No, I've got a large Big Mac's. Pumpkin, if that's not redundant, doing very well right now. A large Big Mac's.
It is kind of
redundant. It's doing well.
All right, I won't call you out on it, but you did.
We've got more tomatoes than we know what to do with at this point. I only put in 4 plants, but they're producing so much it's not even funny. And the one that I was really looking forward to, just because of the novelty of it, was the Berkeley tie dye.
Yeah,
and it looked like they were supposed to be big tomatoes. The one I got was smaller than a baseball.
Was it kind of loud and protesting?
No, it wasn't.
Good.
It was
good.
Kind of tucked away inside, but we harvested the first one yesterday. But I've got a bunch of them on that plant that don't have that weird coloration to them.
Yeah. Are they slower right now to ripen? Or have you noticed?
Seem to be, yeah.
How about you guys?
I don't. The only tomatoes I have are cherry tomatoes.
Yeah, the cherries are all doing well, but my larger tomatoes seem to be taking a little bit longer.
Are they languishing?
They're loitering around, not doing much.
And mine are on. They're on a.
That's because the Berkeley tie dye got to them.
they're on the pool deck. I mean, they're in full sun on concrete, and they're not ripening real fast.
Right.
But
on the pool deck, they probably just want to hang out and relax.
Yeah.
They have no desire
to
work.
I have to bring them a beer every once in a while. So, but they're. We've got a lot. I brought a bag over to the neighbor yesterday just because I'm not going to eat them all.
Where's the bag you brought us this morning?
I gave them at the neighbor's.
I don't see my bag. But there is a benefit to the Sun Gold cherries that I Ooh. Took from a six pack, put into the 4-inch, and then shared with neighbors and friends. Now wherever I go,
you get Sun Gold,
and I figure I have rights, and I can, I mean, I ask, but
you can harvest freely.
Yes, without guilt.
This time,
so yeah, I've been. It's working. It's working for me.
Okay. Very good.
And they're ripening. I don't know what's going on with your guys' ginormous tomatoes, but ones are ripening.
All of our small ones are doing very well. The Sun Golds, the cherries, I didn't do Rapunzel, but what's another? Sweet 100 looks kind of like Rapunzel. They're doing well. It's just the larger tomatoes just are not ripening.
The Sweet 100s, I had a half a six pack of those, didn't I?
That's right. Yeah, we switched. We swapped. Yeah. How are those doing? Because ours are producing.
I think they are part of the... The
compost.
That's what I was.
Yeah, they're composting. Yes, they are.
So they're still contributing to the garden in some manner.
Circle of life.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Good for you.
Oh, well. Wow. At least Roy is bringing me tomatoes.
He is.
Oh, God.
Roy's doing well.
It blows me away how many tomatoes that he grows. Because he brings us a ton of tomatoes. And I'm sure what we get is just a very, very small fraction.
Oh, it is.
Well, when he talks about 20,000 pounds of fruits and vegetables, I mean, so.
But, you know, he has really helped me. I have a terrible looking cucumber at home right now. And normally I'd be concerned about that and trying to fix it. But I know the right thing to do is just shovel prune it, compost it, and put something else in its space.
I did a bunch of cucumbers this year, and we did it differently. Instead of trellising them like Roy does, I just left them on the ground, and they're just thriving. They're doing really well.
I did harvest. I told you I was putting in peppers, all the pretty colors, so they'd look like the little bag of sweet peppers from Costco.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down there with I had a glass of wine in one hand, and this is a great-looking pepper. And I picked it, and it's a nice, bright red sweet pepper. Took a big bite out of it.
And it wasn't sweet?
It wasn't sweet. There's a reason they call it mariachi, and it's not because it made its song.
It made music,
It made music. It was David singing.
And there was nothing I could do except for...
Chug the wine.
Drink more wine, yes.
No, I had to get rid of the pepper from my mouth first. Yes.
Yeah.
It brought tears to my eyes. It was lovely experience.
It was so touching.
Yes.
So,
I was overwhelmed with joy. Yes. This pepper that I grew in my garden.
So stunning and so brave.
Yes. Yes. I have a bunch of colors, but I'm a little scared to eat the rest of them now.
Yeah.
Oh. I put in an Anaheim chili this year, and I've got more chilies than Melanie can do anything with them.
Going to make rellenos with?
Yeah. We've got and put in a jalapeno too. And it's producing. I haven't harvested anything yet, but it's probably got a dozen peppers on it that are just about ready to go. Mm-hmm. Then I put another one in. I don't know what it was, but I burnt the heck out of it with the triple 16 when I threw that on there.
Your dad would be so proud.
Yes, it's so, memories.
So
your dad said, that's my boy.
And then there's another one that I burnt the heck out of with the triple 16, which actually is starting to come back, but it hasn't produced anything yet. The Anaheim's doing really well. So
I hear if you burn them with triple 16, you come back, was it 3 to 4 weeks later, then things are better than ever before, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, for the most part, except for the one that died and the one that is slowly starting to recover. But fortunately, the Anaheim and the jalapeno, those did very well.
I have to ask, because with some of our chemicals, well, most of the chemicals are very much a stickler for, you know, mixing it correctly, following the label. When you use the triple 16, just out of curiosity, and you don't have to say it over the air, but you can nod your head, do you follow the instructions with the quantity that might be applicable for that size of a plant?
Well, I guess it depends on the size of the palm of my hand, how much
close my eyes and guarantee shaking.
Well, the problem was when I was throwing it out there, because the plants were still relatively small, is it got caught up in some of the foliage, and like an idiot, I didn't wash it off. And that's where the major.
Okay, so it wasn't
that's where
excessive
the major,
quantity of fertilizer.
Oh, yeah,
on
it was.
That too.
But the worst part was getting it caught up in the foliage.
I would like to do a quick round table survey. Do you read the label instructions of a granular fertilizer before applying it? George?
If it's a triple 16, I would read it. I don't use it. So everything I use won't burn.
Organics. We know your answer?
Obviously.
No. Mark Mahady?
Typically, no.
I don't. I just take a handful and throw it. Right. And if it's hotter, like triple 16,
give it
extra
water.
Throw it longer. I would break my wrist more so it disperses over a larger area.
And use a larger quantity of water to
ensure. Then water the heck out.
Exactly.
I haven't used triple 16 in decades. I typically use the organics or grow power, which it's very difficult to burn with
as well. Right. But
and in those cases, sometimes I don't read the label.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Those are usually grow power was my go-to, but I've just been stunned at how great that.
Well,
tomatoes.
It's just amazing when you actually.
Well, if you actually use a fertilizer.
Exactly.
That's a great point. And I mentioned this to David. The Grow Power tablets. Capri has a ton of plants on the porch, all kinds of kind of house plants and stuff on the front porch, wrapped around the house. And we fed them with Grow Power tablets recently. Two feedings now over the course of several months, and they are they have exploded.
Apparently you didn't read the label on that 12-month tablet before applying it a couple of times.
But they're Grow Power, and Mr. Anderson, Ken's dad, said, do it quarterly.
Yeah.
So, and I do it quarterly, and my goodness, the difference in those plants right now.
Yeah.
Do you know why I recommend Grow Power planting tablets? Where that came to me, it was a hand-me-down from Walter Jr., from Ken's dad.
He gave me a cymbidium once. I helped in the cymbidium class, and he gave me one at the end. He said, take this, and I took it home.
I'm still bitter about that, by the way.
And with the Grow Power tablets. And I said, it says, once a year. He goes, no, you have to do it every 3 months. And my goodness, just the plants on the porch are stunning right now. What a difference.
Is it okay he's giving off-label information?
It's incumbent on the individual that purchased the product to read the label. It is a violation of federal law, as you well know.
Okay. To use that product in a manner.
Oh, my dad's he's always been
a rebel,
a big fan of fertilizer tablets.
Fertitabs.
Yeah, Fertitabs. Well, that was what he used on all of his cymbidiums. That was it.
Cymbidiums, and we use them on the staghorns at the nursery as well. I use them at home on the staghorns. Yeah. And
such
it's
a great
stunning.
Way to take care of containers, staghorns. You can use them in the ground. They're recommended for that. But anything, every time you water, it releases a little bit of food. And if my plants waited for me to mix up an individual gallon of water soluble, they're never going to get fed.
They're going
to
die.
Well, they're going to die from the drought,
We have fuchsias that are a couple years old that are blooming right now. Phoenix Robellini blooming, which I've never had bloom before.
It makes me almost proud to see you.
So enthusiastic.
The virtues of feeding and taking
care
of your plants.
Well, I've always fed plants, but this particular product I've only used for the last year or so.
What are they called again?
Grow Power tablets.
Planting tablets. Slow release. And I have a box of 1,200, and I have kept it inside and dry still have them.
You can use them.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, very exciting. That's one of the best things about them is just the convenience factor.
You just
pick it up and throw it in the pot. That's all you got to do. So
I have a goal for the weekend now.
You're going to go home and put those tablets
in today.
Pots. Right. But over the next couple days.
Probably Monday. I'm not thinking it's going to happen tomorrow.
I thought you were going rock climbing
You're going
on
busy
Monday.
Tomorrow.
Huh?
Aren't you busy tomorrow?
Yeah. It won't be tomorrow, but Monday maybe. Yeah. When am I going rock climbing?
Monday.
Yeah, maybe not.
Okay.
I am actually, I may go rock climbing, but it might be McGinty Rocks.
Uh-huh.
You want to do a mountain rock?
We'll see.
Ellie Lane loop of Iron Mountain?
We'll see.
Okay.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. If you want to give us a call today, we would love to talk to you. 888-344-1170 is the number. We've got all kinds of stuff to talk about coming up. We've got thrips on... Thrips on nectarines, butterfly sense of taste, or how do butterflies taste? That was the question yesterday.
Right, we answered it.
Yeah, kind of papery.
If that's not enough, there's more.
Oh, there's plenty more. There's plenty more. Like I said, you're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Roses are red, my love.
Violets are blue. And we're back. Sugar is sweet. With more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ.
He hit that perfectly.
Yeah, did a nice job.
They faded the number to Roses Are Red. That was perfectly done.
And this was, I think this was your song that you chose, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did add this because I'm an old man. And
yeah, there ain't no doubt about that. Do you want to just quickly say why?
What are you talking about?
That we have a new song? It wasn't Garden Party. Why not? It's always Garden Party.
Oh, because we're mixing it up a little bit.
That's it? Moving.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's okay with you, right?
Well, yes.
Okay.
We were talking about
butterflies
and how they taste.
Well, they don't taste very good at all.
I don't think they taste very good.
They're kind of papery.
I can tell you, I've never had one. So.
But
and
how they find the host plants and where they're gonna lay.
So they know it's the proper.
So they know that it's
the
proper plant to lay their eggs.
Females. Yeah.
And it's they taste through their feet.
Well, I thought
they have chemical receptors in their feet. And George, you were the one that actually.
Well, actually, we'll go back, give David some credit for last week, because David did say he looked on a blog or something and they taste with their feet.
You didn't want to call it out. You wanted to study it.
I said I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just, you know, some guy from, you know, Tony's garden blog or something. Well,
we don't want to give out misinformation.
That's right. Too much, other than what we already do.
Right.
But yes, they do taste with their feet. So the females, and taste might not be the right word, but they have chemical receptors on their feet, and when they alight or land on the particular plant, they rub one of their legs and kind of release the chemicals from the plant. And if it matches to what they're supposed to have, they'll then rub all their feet to double check, and then they'll lay their eggs. If it is in fact an Asclepia, in the case of a monarch, or perhaps a dill, fennel, or parsley, if it's a swallowtail, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think that story's as exciting as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it wasn't captivating.
It wasn't, but, yeah.
No.
So we'll go back to the tasting, how they taste.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear they don't taste very good, and that's why other butterflies look like monarchs, so that birds will confuse other butterflies with monarchs and not want to eat them because monarchs don't taste very good. That's what I've heard. I have not tasted a monarch. You guys tasted a monarch before?
I have not knowingly.
Okay. Have you used your feet to taste before?
No.
Never.
No, I can't say that.
I
try to keep my feet away from
any
food.
Everybody, any living organisms.
Exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah. Lost my train of thought. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. We're going to go down to Otay Mesa, where Bob is waiting. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine. My tomato plant has blossom and rot. And when I plant it, I dig up the soil, make a hole, and I put a lot of powdered gypsum in there. And I'm wondering if that's a waste of time, putting the powdered gypsum. And the other question would be the liquid calcium. How often and when would you put that in the soil, and does that really help?
George, you were the one that came up with the article on blossom end rot last week, I think.
Adams came up with it a couple of weeks ago, where the studies say that it may not be calcium specifically, but maybe the uptake of the calcium. And there are some studies indicating that the pH can be a factor in how readily available the calcium is for the plant.
And soil moisture
as
well.
And soil moisture, the consistency of soil moisture.
But I don't think it's a waste of time to put the gypsum in the soil.
Right.
You're not going to hurt anything by putting the gypsum in there.
It is a good calcium source.
But I think the biggest issue is
water.
Consistent soil moisture, making sure that the plants do not get too dry between watering. and that the soil is consistently moist. Because if it gets too dry, then the calcium falls out of solution and the roots can't pick it up. So I tell people you never want to let your plants get – you never want to let your tomatoes, your peppers, your squash get any drier than what a wrung-out sponge feels like. You always want to make sure that there's some soil moisture there.
So an integrated pest management for the state does say that it's – at this point, they still say it's a calcium issue, but they say it can be aggravated by high salt content in your soil or low soil moisture.
So I hope that helps. However, usually blossom end rot is more of an issue with the first few tomatoes that you go to harvest. Your first one, you go and flip it over, and it has blossom end rot. And even without doing anything else, sometimes the rest of the crop is just fine. So do put the calcium in there. But even sometimes when the calcium is there, the other stress factors will prevent the plant from getting what it needs, causing the blossom end rot.
If you water too much, will that affect the tomato?
It can. It probably, yes, it can. It too can prevent the absorption. But
I don't think I've ever seen an overwatered tomato. It would be more, if you were going to overwater it, it would be more likely that it would be a problem if it was in the ground rather than in a container. I know you said you planted yours in the ground. But I don't think I've ever seen an issue of overwatering a tomato.
I would think it'd still be a factor simply because when all of the research indicates, it says, you know, inconsistent watering. So if you keep it too wet, it may also
That's consistent.
Well, no, you keep it too wet and then you let it get little dry. You could have some issues there.
Yeah.
And also, if the roots can't breathe, if there's no oxygen available, you're stressing the plant, and it can be a problem.
Is this happening throughout your crop, Bob, or is it just the first tomatoes?
Yes. Real bad, too. Half of it to tomato.
Did you say they were in the ground or in a pot?
In the ground.
How often do you water?
About every couple of days.
You might want to try watering longer, because every couple of days should be adequate frequency. So maybe water it longer so it soaks down a little deeper and further out.
And what about that liquid calcium? Is that worth a try?
Yes, because it bypasses the roots. If you spray it on the foliage, it is absorbed through the foliage, so you can bypass the roots in case there is a problem down there.
It's more readily absorbed quickly into the plant.
So when would you apply that? As soon as you plant it or wait a couple of weeks?
No, I would do it throughout the season. I would do it probably once a week. I would take a look at the label. Is that what you're supposed to do?
I was about to say what the label indicates.
And see how often they say to use it. But I would do it as the fruit is developing.
Okay. Appreciate the information.
All right. Have a great weekend, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Goodbye.
Take care.
On that note, when was the last time anyone here saw blossom end rot on a cherry tomato or on a sun gold cherry?
Never.
Never.
Plant small tomatoes. I'm going to start the Plant Small Tomato Coalition.
Well, you know,
Oh, you're a 501C?
I'm going to be.
I don't know. I don't know which one it was. It might have been the early girl, but I was going out and harvesting a couple days ago, picking some tomatoes, and I picked one, had blossom end rot. The one, literally, the one next to it on the cluster did not have it. Had no symptoms of it at all.
I would say in a normal season, we don't hear from people beyond the first one. It usually is, and mine as well. But this year, I've had more people complaining, is that the right word, or mentioning that it's more than just the first tomatoes. Because usually they will say, oh, yeah, it is just the first one, you're right. But it doesn't sound like that was the case with Bob.
I've only had, I think, maybe two out of all the tomatoes that we've had going.
Mine was on a Celebrity this year, and it looked beautiful from the top, and I pulled it up, and it was one of the few, you know,
black.
I was complaining earlier how they weren't ripening. It was one of the few that had ripened, and I turned it over, and it was shot.
Did you eat the top half?
I may have cut the bottom off, put it in the rat trap nearby.
Smart man.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, there are about three or four fewer or less mice right now that were eating the tomatoes.
Very good.
You know, that's one of the things that's nice. I shouldn't say that's nice about blossom end rot, but if you do have blossom end rot, on tomatoes, for the most part, you just slice the bottom off of it, and they're fine. Can't say the same for zucchini.
Yeah,
they you get blossom end rot and zucchini, there's really not much.
I nibbled around the edge. I didn't cut off the bottom edge. I just kind of ate from the top, and then I just discarded it to naturally compost into the soil. I didn't think to put it in a
trap. I have the mouse traps and rat traps in the garden all the time, not necessarily set, but periodically I will set them as needed.
Yeah, I had a couple of tomatoes that had some chew marks on them. So I left them there in case they're hungry. Hopefully they'll just go back.
Oh, they will go back, and that's why I use them on this right in the same spot. I'll set the trap with that tomato right on the ground beneath the plant.
Click on the patented rangefinder, hit the same spot again. It wasn't me this time.
No, it wasn't. One thing that I've noticed that's been coming through the store, which I hadn't seen in a long, long time, is giant whitefly.
Yeah, yes. It's funny you say. I've had two people
in the past week or so, we've had two or three people come in with giant whitefly, and each time it was on hibiscus.
Hibiscus, yes.
Yeah, which is what it used
typically,
to
yeah.
typically would go after. Although I remember when it was a huge problem like 20 years ago. Plumerias used to get it really bad as well. Mm-hmm. But the giant whitefly, you see it on hibiscus. It coats the backs of the foliage. It looks like whitefly.
Like a
has a really long like white,
cottony candy-like beard
that comes off of it. It's relatively easy to control. Systemics that we have now actually will work for 8 to 12 months when you put them on. Then there's also I say it's anecdotal because I don't know that anybody's actually done a scientific analysis of it, but they say that if you mulch with worm castings it'll keep it under control as well.
I can say with for me it's we talk about anecdotal, but for me I put that out under hibiscus a couple of years ago, thick, maybe 3 inches. 18, 24 inches out, from the base, and I have not had a whitefly problem at all in 3 years.
Well, so we could call that an anecdotal antidote?
You can call it an anecdotal antidote for
a giant whitefly?
I told you I talked to Sharon from Sharon's Worm World about that. Because she's not a plant person, but she's a worm girl.
She's a worm girl.
She's a worm girl.
At any rate, but I asked her about that.
Is that a term of affection?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
I mean, then, yes. But I asked her about that, and she just didn't know what I was talking about. But she goes, it's funny, I have whitefly. So she used it. A month later, I talked to her, and she's like, yeah, everything's gone. All the whitefly
that I had on my head. Has to do with the chitons or something in the
soil. I can't remember the term. I'll have to look it up. Anyway, you're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
Small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me.
And we're back. I'm guessing more garden talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ.
I'm guessing that was George.
Another one of George's.
Well, I'm on board. That's Edelweiss for those of you who didn't hear Edelweiss and didn't know from Sound of Music.
Well, I know what it is. I know that. It's okay. It's all good. Why are you looking at me? Like
because
that?
Because you were looking at us that way.
And you shook your head.
Well, yeah. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Hey, Ken, before you go any further forward here on the tomatoes for you guys, do you guys put calcium or oyster shell or anything when you plant your tomatoes?
Usually I do. This time I did not.
Curious.
No, I actually don't.
I throw stuff in.
I usually recommend people when they're planting a garden of any kind, to throw pelleted gypsum down along with fertilizer and any soil amendment. When you're amending the soil, put it. Like I said, you're not going to hurt anything by doing it.
Usually, I just use a potting soil. I use it in containers, so I.
Right.
I should, but I don't.
If you're using a fertilizer that's tailored or made for vegetables, it typically has calcium in it.
Correct.
Yes.
But I always put oyster shell in when I do the tomatoes. I was just curious what you were doing.
There's a shortage of oyster shell right now for chickens, so you better not be using my oyster shell.
Well, we don't have a lot like we used to. We used to have the big bags, and I haven't seen the large bags.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
It's hard to come by. I don't know if people weren't eating enough oysters
or not eating oysters anymore.
Yeah. I fortunately
in the pandemic.
I couldn't buy the, what was it, $1 a pound or something, oyster shell when I could get a 50-pound bag for like 10 or 12 bucks. So I still have plenty of my 50-pound bag left. But I'll throw some into my tomato garden sometime when
it's
plant again.
35% calcium. And, you know, most of the fertilizers, like the organics, are like 3 or 4%. So,
but it puts the calcium there.
Right.
And that's all. It just needs to be there and...
pH has to be right as well.
Absorbable.
Right.
Is that a word?
Absorbable?
It is now.
Yeah. you know, speaking of interesting insects, we were talking about the giant whitefly coming back, but one that's showed up a couple of times over the past couple of weeks that I had never seen before was the Chinese star scale. Is that?
Yes. Well, yeah. It's something... It's got.
Was it one of the wax scales?
Yeah, wax scale. Yeah, wax
Chinese
scale.
Wax
scale.
Chinese, okay. The one that looks like something out of Super Mario Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah. Very bizarre. Very bizarre looking.
Distinctive.
Insect. Yeah.
Scale.
Kind of a black body with little white, almost
petals.
Like cones. Cones that stick up. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like a barnacle.
Yeah.
Well, most scale looks like a barnacle.
Well, this one.
This one moves around a little more.
Yeah.
Was that a dancing move?
I was trying to look like Steve Martin.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing the
walk like
dancing.
An Egyptian.
Thank you.
No, I was thinking it had like little spikes coming
out
the side.
Don't ever do that again. It did. And we had a little boar that somebody had brought in, I think it was a branch off of his almond, and I took a video off of our video screen and sent it to the ag department, and they couldn't ID it from that, and they really didn't seem to care. And then I got a call yesterday from the ag department. They do care. If
they freaked out.
Well, they didn't freak out, but they were interested, and they would send somebody to go to his house and pick it up if he's willing. So I'm going to reach out to him today and find out.
And what kind of tree did you say?
It was in an almond tree.
Okay.
You know, from, you know, like one of your trees. Yeah, when
my
you're people.
People.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear from the ag department about your ants?
I did finally. I got an email yesterday telling me my fire ants were southern fire ants, and we don't care about those, not the red imported ant that we do care about.
Oh, well, yeah, that's interesting.
I had never noticed fire ants before, and I've always wandered around my yard
barefoot. I know.
But now...
You don't do that anymore.
Well, I still do, but I use... I go out and spray them. It does a pretty good job, but it hasn't removed all of the colonies permanently. I keep finding more, so I'm going to go do it again.
Well, I wonder what the difference between the southern fire ant and the
accent.
Imported
it's
fire
the way
ant
they talk.
Is that
they say y'all a lot more.
Yes. Well, the Rifa is from the y'all town, too.
Y'all.
I think it came from Texas to here, didn't it, originally?
I thought it was somewhere down in the south.
So don't they say y'all down there, too?
Perhaps. Here's a question for you.
Yes.
Or have you been bit by...
I have been bitten by them before. Yeah, that's how you know these little ants climb on you. Instead of just wandering and annoying, they stop and bite.
Yeah.
And
what are you using to spray?
It's a Thrin, and I'm not sure which one.
Okay.
It also is good for residually killing flies that land on it, so it's good for barn walls and things like that. I think it's not Cyfluthrin. I'm trying to remember which one it is, but it does a really good job of wiping
permethrin
out.
Permethrin or something like
that. I think it is permethrin, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A synthetic pyrethroid. But it does a very good job of knocking them down and making them stop. But then I find another colony, still walking around barefoot by. Sure. I mean,
that's how you find them? You walk around and until you step on them?
Yes, I do that. It's part of the control, the contact and control process. Instead of going door to door, I walk barefoot.
I have friends that have a lot of property in Florida, and when she walks around, she carries a sidearm with snake shot in it. Do you carry your holster with your thrin in case you need it in an emergency?
No, my chemical with my thrin is in the garage where I never use it unless the ants are really annoying my feet, which they do.
Have you thought about spraying your feet first just as a preventative as you're walking out?
I believe if I read the label, it's going to suggest I not spray that on my
just
person.
Just checking.
You know, there's fire ant controls that are available from different companies. Of course, they're not available in California. But looking at the labels and catalogs and things like that, and the one that I remember the most of, it was acephate, which is orthene.
Orthene?
Yeah. And then mix it with water and pour it right down the mound.
The mound, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll take care of them. We used to sell a lot of orthene.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Oh, God, that stuff smells.
Is that a systemic?
Yeah, it's a systemic. It's just reeks. Right. Reeks. It's a horrible smelling stuff. But it did the job. It did the job. Yes. And for staghorns, powdered orthene was the go-to thing.
It killed anything that got on them and no oil in it to adversely
burn
affect them.
Yeah. No, other than the smell, it was incredibly good stuff. And the other chemical that was the go-to for years was Isotox.
Isotox, yeah.
Which was
combinations.
It was orthene and Vendex.
Miticide.
The miticide. That was outstanding. Outstanding stuff. Isotox was another one of those ones where Isotox was just the trademark name, and they would change the ingredients from time to time, but I think its last iteration was acephate and Vendex.
I think you're right.
But it was a fantastic product.
Wasn't that something that was used for ants?
Durspan? Was a chlor. I can never pronounce
chlorpyrifos.
Chlorpyrifos, yeah.
In some fashion.
Durspan was what took over after Chlordane.
Chlordane
mm-hmm. left the market.
Durspan was very popular in all the nursery stores, Home Depots, etc.
We sold a lot of it for
ants.
Yeah. Chlordane was very popular too until it wasn't. But that was some nasty stuff. I remember a customer came in one time, they had something on their tomatoes and they sprayed all their tomatoes with Chlordane. It's like, I don't think I would eat those if I were you.
Wouldn't either.
Do you remember the bulb salesman who was telling us about in the North County, one of the old time rancher farmers up there, and he was up there to sell him bulbs, and he walked into his pesticide cabinet and he had Chlordane dust and he was so proud that he still had it and it was everywhere. And do you remember that?
Yes. That was years and years ago, but yes. Yeah, I do remember that.
It makes me laugh and smile from the, because if they're taking it away, it means it's good. I got to keep it.
Exactly.
I've got to have it. So he stored it up. It wasn't in proper containers. It was everywhere. Yeah. But the way he told the story was a little better than the way I just
did.
But it was very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I hadn't thought about that in a long time.
That was a while ago.
That was probably bad to walk into that
container. He probably shouldn't have been. Yeah.
There was somebody. It was one of our salespeople was saying that when you would walk into a garden center and you could smell the chemicals, it was the smell of money.
Those were the glory days.
Yes. But
that's when you could smell every. I mean, that's true though. You'd walk into a garden center wherever for the pesticide section.
The one I remember was there used to be a Save-On on Garnett and Pacific Beach, and the old Save-On stores, you would walk into the store, and the first section that you got to was the yard and garden section before you actually got into the store. And as soon as you walk into that first section of the store, you could just totally smell all the chemicals and everything that was in there.
That's hilarious.
And then you would walk into the actual drugstore.
You know, that is one benefit to the new generations of pesticides. They don't have those strong odors, so you can spray and the neighbors don't know and come over and stick their noses into your business, and you can do what you need to do, and they don't reek like malathion and all of that stuff.
Oh, that one still stinks. We still sell that one. That's available.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And it still reeks. Stinks.
Yeah. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
It's the time of the season for planting.
It's
is that what they
the
say in that
for
song?
Planting.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what I thought I heard. Yeah.
Great song from the 60s, I would say.
Yes.
Who is that? Animals?
It's the Zombies.
Zombies. That's Zombies. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. We've been talking briefly about different insects that are showing up, and another one that you saw this week was thrips. On nectarines, plums.
Well, I didn't see the thrips this time.
But we saw the
damage associated with it,
yeah,
right?
Which is pretty common.
It is very common.
Yeah,
yeah. And I actually learned about it a couple of years ago from David. But I saw it, so I knew what I was looking for.
Yeah, but it shows up as kind of brown scarring on nectarines, plums.
Nectarines, spicy nectar plums. At least mine get it pretty.
Is yours ripe yet?
Mine are just ripening. They took a long time this year.
That's a great fruit.
Yeah. David, you said yours are done.
Ours
are just finishing up.
It's not a grapefruit.
No, a great.
Oh.
You're right.
It
it's
is.
Not a grapefruit.
It is a great piece of fruit. Spicy nectar plum.
Yes.
One of the best.
It is. That thrip, though, is a western flower thrip that causes that damage.
Yeah, and you had mentioned that it gets under the...
It gets into the flower as the
flower. Gets under the flower.
Yeah, and just as the fruit is forming inside there, the insect starts eating.
Did you look into controls of it? Just let it go? I mean, it's just
cosmetic.
It's cosmetic.
But it does make the skin a little rougher. So if you're going to eat it, it's a rougher. It's not smooth and silky and soft.
Well, the
like David's skin.
Well, I was going to say, soft as a baby's behind.
The interesting thing is, though, it doesn't seem to affect peaches.
No, it doesn't.
It's
the fuzz factor.
That the same thing that turns me off about peaches apparently turns thrips off as well.
You got something in common.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of my big. I mean,
I don't mind peaches, but I'm not a big fan either.
Peaches and nectarines, I'd prefer a nectarine.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay.
You disagree?
Peach is a fuzzy nectarine, or a nectarine is a fuzzless peach. They're the same thing.
Well, I know, but it's the fuzz that's the problem. So
I just would get past it. You know, a good peach is a good peach, and a good nectarine is a good nectarine.
No fuzz. I agree, but if I have to
choose,
if I have a choice, I'm going to take the nectarine rather than the peach.
Agreed.
So to answer your question about control.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah. I'm having an argument with Ken first.
Spinosad Captain Jack's works well for that. You just
for thrips?
Yes, for thrips.
When do you I have did to not do it?
Well, you've got to be cautious not to have it when the bees are foraging, because it is moderately toxic to bees. But you, as the flowers start dying off, it's time to spray it.
And okay. Will one spray take care of it? Do you spray? I mean, as soon as they get done, maybe get a minimum amount of rasping on the fruit.
You might, right.
Interesting. I know there's pheromone traps for them, for the western flower
thrips. That's right, you mentioned
that,
right.
Our same pest wizard that we get the pheromone traps for the citrus leaf miner makes one for flower thrips. I just have never
Do we have them?
Bothered. No, we don't. We could, but I just don't know if it's...
Yeah, IPM talks about weeds, too. If you can keep the weeds away from your plants, that can help reduce the populations of thrips, but...
Smirk emoji. That ain't,
right.
That's not going to happen.
No.
I was not aware of that.
And is the thrip that gets into our gardenia a western flower thrip, or is that a different thrip?
I'd have to look for you real quick, but I don't know. It probably is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Don't know. Okay. No, don't care.
I know it's a thrip. From gardenias.
It's a thrip. I think
controls
gardenias
are the same across for all thrips.
I don't think I've ever seen a gardenia flower that does not have a thrip.
Correct.
Now, the big plant, the one that looks the worst, I think, is the Myoporum thrip.
Yes.
That destroys the Myoporum trees.
Yeah.
Just destroys them.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why Myoporums
I don't know if I've seen a Myoporum tree in the last 10
we
years.
Had,
The clean and green. Clean and green is gorgeous.
There's one.
And it is thrip resistant.
One called clean and green, and it is totally thrip resistant. The foliage is a little bit longer than...
Is it skinnier too?
It's a little narrower.
Yeah, okay. I guess I have skinnier. Seen that. I forgot about that one. Okay, you're right.
Nobody wants it.
Yeah, it's true.
They've just fallen so out of favor that nobody cares.
But if you want a fast-growing,
good point.
Screen, Myoporum is a great plant. But it's so hard; they don't hold up in the nursery. They grow so fast; they outgrow their pots.
Yeah.
So quickly.
Yeah, yeah, they do. What was the other one that's a constant problem? Viburnum tinus almost always has spider mites on it.
And yes. Thrips, too. It turns the leaves that grayish color.
That silvery gray color. Yeah. A constant battle with that.
Azaleas, too.
Yes.
That was an interesting thing I read about azaleas, and I'm still kind of baffled where that list came from, but we had that list showed up at the copy machine in Poway. Plants to keep bees away? Or that don't attract bees?
I was just going to make a joke about having a copy machine. at already, we can just get to it whenever.
If you needed it.
And it kind of in the rural area of Poway. Yeah.
Yes.
Bees that, azaleas and rhododendrons can be toxic to bees.
I did not know that.
Well, according to that list. But which I thought was interesting because they said azaleas and rhododendrons can be toxic to bees, but honey that's produced by bees that feed on azaleas and rhododendrons is not suitable for human consumption. But that kind of begged the question, well, if the plants are toxic to bees, how are they making honey out of it? So
I don't know.
But I had also heard that in the Central Valley, almond honey is not good for human consumption. They can use it in the manufacture of other products, but it's not a good.
Does it have cyanide in it?
I don't know. Maybe it does. I don't know. But it's not a good source of edible honey.
We're going to have to cite those sources and look that
up. We have to look that up.
My folks have some southern indica or sun azaleas in their backyard,
mm-hmm.
and they used to be under a big Monterey pine that finally has given up. It's 60 years old, and it was finally done. And they get full sun almost all day. They get some afternoon shade as the sun is going past and starting to drop in the sky. But as long as they get water and they're in good soil, they look great with all that sun. And I'm guessing that's why they call them.
They're out east, too.
They're
not far from you. Yeah. So.
I don't recommend it because so frequently people don't have all the conditions just right.
Right.
But if they're in good soil and they're getting plenty of water.
Yeah, exactly.
They do really well. And the southern indicas are bigger growing shrubs.
The two most, well, We don't sell that many azaleas
anymore. Not like we used to.
Are your parents in soil that's, you know, set for acid-loving plants when you first planted them?
No, it was they're in raised planters that were around the base of this tree was in a planter in the backyard when that tree went in 1960.
Jeez, yeah.
Did well for many years. It outlasted most of the Monterey pines in the East County. But I was surprised because their sprinklers, I get to do sprinkler checks.
Adjust
them
on occasions, yes.
Yeah, and they were still doing well. The new one we put in, my dad always, he loves his azaleas, so, and his camellias.
His camellias, yeah, I know.
They're pretty. They're
nice plants. They do well. And the azaleas need more water than the camellias, but they're, we could do a shade-loving.
Actually, that's not a bad idea.
Some other time.
We might have to do that next week.
Since we're talking about how well they do in the sun, we could turn it into a shade-loving segment. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
It's a plan.
As much sense as David ever makes.
And I think that, you know, as I recall, the two most popular ones that we would sell were Red Wing and Alaska.
Yes.
These are Phoenicia formosa.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
Those. And
they're beautiful.
George Tabor.
Yeah, George Tabor is a
great
one.
Yeah. Old school plants.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back next Saturday morning at 6 o'clock with another hour. We hope you'll join us. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticulture news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew or want to learn more about the show, how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to askanexpert@walteranderson.com. That's askanexpert@walteranderson.com or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at this same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.
This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.